Hey there, my name's Jared Holt, and welcome to Shitpost. This is a podcast about the internet, how it relates to tech, politics, and culture. Every other week, I bring on someone from that realm who I think is doing interesting work or has an interesting perspective on current events. That could be researchers, journalists, activists, on and on. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on the player of your choice and leave us a nice review. That helps us a lot. You can also check out the newsletter associated with this podcast on Substack. There's a link to that in the description. In the last month, the U.S. far-right movement has sat in awe of trucker-themed convoy protests in Canada. Those rallies occupied the streets of Ottawa for 3 weeks before authorities dispersed the scene. The protests triggered states of emergency. They disrupted business and traffic, and they were marked by the loud, incessant honking of cars and truck horns. Like all culture war type movements, it also attracted a share of far-right extremist elements ranging from neo-Nazis, one-off, to full-fledged hate groups. Towards the tail end of the protests, the Canadian government took a variety of actions, including making arrests and freezing financial transactions. And though the protests are over for now, some reports suggest that it may take Ottawa a while to recover. Workers who lost pay for being unable to work in businesses located at the scene of the protest, for example, may never recover that money. As protests disrupted the Canadian capital for weeks, onlookers among the pro-Trump and far-right movements in the U.S. saw the manifestation of the kind of disruptive and chaotic scenes that they often only imagine, hoping to recreate what they were seeing on their social media feeds and televisions. Some have sought to gather their fellow supporters, their like-minded comrades, if you will, for a copycat of sorts. As I record this episode, one such convoy is crawling towards the Washington, D.C. area. Dubbed the People's Convoy, it intends to arrive in the D.C. area by about March 5th. Though organizers are discouraging participants from going into D.C. proper, where thousands of additional police and National Guard are stationed anticipating the arrival, it's not clear if that crowd that is traveling with them across the country intends to follow that suggestion. This convoy started in California and has been rolling at this time for about a week. It began out of a Facebook group and is presently the most organized, well-funded, and media-covered convoy protest copycat thing happening in the U.S. right now. It has prominent figures in the vaccine skepticism and conspiracy movement backing it up. It's been on things like Tucker Carlson. It's getting around. But not all is well. Throughout the convoy, there have been loads of confusion, paranoia, disorganization, and what's more, the U.S. convoy wannabes are now struggling to get the attention they feel they deserve since Russia invaded Ukraine and took up the majority of international news industry attention. The year is 2022, and what would a protest movement be without the promise of clout? And add to that fact, there are really not remaining vaccine mandates to protest, so what's the point exactly? Joining the podcast now is Sarah Aniano. She's a graduate student at Monmouth University, where she's studying communication with a focus on the rhetoric of the far right on social media. Sarah's close eye on the convoy's development from its early days has been exceptionally nuanced and thoughtful, and I'm really happy to have her on the show to talk about what she's been seeing. But before we talk, a note. This episode will be released on March 3rd. As you listen to this interview, know it was recorded on March 1st. Due to the nature of this kind of protest, as it's going on, picking up, dropping participants as it moves eastward across the nation's roadways, things can change rapidly. So what's presented here in this episode is the best possible information we have while we're taping it. But do know that situations like this can be fluid. And with all of that hedging and ass covering out of the way, Sarah, how's it going?
Hello, Jared. Thank you so much for having me. It is awesome to be here.
Oh, the pleasure's mine. I'm glad we're finally getting to do this. So, yeah. Sarah, you, unlike someone like me, you don't do this full time as a job. So my first natural question is why? Why are you looking at these convoy protests? For me, I do this kind of stuff for a living. So my motivation is obvious. I'm paid to do this. I'm curious what your motivation is to do this.
So I'm getting my master's in communication, and I'm writing my thesis on the rhetoric of QAnon Instagram comments in the week leading up to the Capitol riots. So when I saw that the People's Convoy in particular was gaining a little bit of traction, I kind of thought to myself, well, how can I apply my takeaways, my hindsight-driven takeaways from analyzing what led up to J6 on social media to this? I have no way of knowing if this will manifest in any kind of large demonstration like what we saw on J6, but it is something unique. And I didn't really see people paying quite as much attention to it as I thought people would, especially towards the end of the Ottawa convoy. When it came to the Ottawa convoy towards the end, people were losing steam with the movement because they saw that it was getting broken up by police. Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act, which kind of drove people away from the convoy idea in general. But then all of a sudden, in like a couple of days, all these plans for a U.S. convoy started to materialize. And everybody who had been keeping a watchful eye on the Canadian convoy kind of woke up one day and we were like, oh, like this has evolved overnight. So I wanted to make sure that this was being tracked in a relatively objective, although I will obviously say that I'm coming at this from a leftist perspective, but I wanted to track it in a fair way because a lot of people tend to cover this stuff and maybe demonize the participants or make fun of them or spread even more misinformation about a protest driven by misinformation. So I wanted to see if I can kind of help contribute to this kind of, I don't know, investigative journalism field. You know, this isn't really usually what I do, but I know what to look for and I know what to worry about. And so that's kind of what drove me into this. Well, drove me, that's a good pun. That's that's kind of what motivated me to take a special interest in this event.
You know, if someone were to stop listening to this podcast right now, they're listening in their car, they just pulled up, they're at work, they have to turn the volume down to order breakfast at the drive-thru, whatever it may be. What's your top takeaway for them? You've been looking at this very early, earlier than a lot of people, I think, were really looking at this and kind of putting things out there about it. What should people make of this?
The takeaway, there's a few takeaways. The first takeaway is that this is really not about mandates and it's really not about truckers. They may fall back on that, but it's about so much more. It is a direct extension of the frustration from post J6 and from the past 2 years of living with COVID. It is anti-vax, it is partisan, it is heavily right-leaning. And even if nothing even happens that is significant or newsworthy come this weekend when the People's Convoy is meant to arrive in the DC area, there is still really worrisome rhetoric circling in these Telegram and Instagram and you know, YouTube live stream chats. A lot of it is rooted in anti-Semitic discourse, in anti-liberal discourse, but some of it is quite directly violent and it's almost inciting violence. So whether or not this materializes in some significant way this weekend is kind of beside the point because it can still take hold in the year to come. And I'm especially thinking about the midterm elections because the election fraud theory is such a core tenet of the convoy messaging that I have heard so far.
Yeah, that's kind of been where my head has been recently too, and I'm glad you said that. Because even if they show up and they have their cars and they don't go into DC, the fact is they united people with the same energy that propels, frankly, things like Let's Go Biden and all that dumb shit, and got their shit together and drove across the country. And people who are that motivated, especially when they're harboring all kinds of intense beliefs, can pose real risks. And I'm also generally kind of part curious, part worried. You know, people that have joined this convoy and sacrificed weeks of their lives, all mm-hmm. I'm sure, thousands and thousands of dollars on gas and lodging and food to go all the way across the country. I don't know that if they're going to be content to like drive around the Beltway, which is the highway system around DC in a big circle. I mean, like, you came all this way. Are you going to get to Virginia and be like, well, that was fun, and turn around? I don't know. I just don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's my concern too, which is why I can't tell if they genuinely don't know what they're going to do once they reach the Beltway, because I've heard that spoken about quite vaguely. In one of the live streams yesterday, an interviewer of this stream was talking to a participant, and they were like, well, we're going to get our demands in DC. How we're going to do that, we don't know yet, but we're going to get it. And it was just kind of like, yeah, anyway. And they kind of changed the subject. So again, I can't tell if they just don't know, or if there is some kind of subtle plan that they just don't want to put on a public forum, because there is a lot of paranoia post J6 that they are being tracked, and that they are being pulled into some kind of Antifa government-driven trap once they get to D.C.
I just love the idea that Antifa is camped out in D.C. waiting for semi-trucks to pull up anyway.
Every single day I see so much paranoia about Antifa infiltration in the chat, in the convoy, in the live streams, in the YouTube chats. It's a really, really common topic. Amanda Moore, when she came on your show and when she wrote that article not too long ago, talked a lot about how at January 6th, the paranoia was just a huge talking point amongst the participants. And I'm seeing the same thing here. And it serves two purposes. One is to make sure they cover, you know, all their tracks as best they can. But also, it sets it up so that any kind of violence that does end up happening, whether or not they're associated with it, can then later be blamed on Antifa. So, for example, I saw a lot of this before J6 on Instagram, which made it so much easier after the storming of the Capitol for people to say, no, I warned you. Remember, I told you there was going to be Antifa instigators. You know, we don't know those people.
Yeah, no, it was just like a reflex, you know? It was before anybody knew anything. Oh, Antifa.
Yeah, it's very easy.
But let's go a little bit deeper here now that we've got that top line out of the way. This one's for the real heads. We're going in. I guess my first question for you is, who the hell are these people? They call this a trucker convoy. You already said it's not really about truckers. And I know that because my dad worked in the industry for a while. So I know way too much about the supply chain for like any normal person. But I can confidently say most truckers are not in a financial position to do something like this. Only about 1 out of 10 people who drive trucks are what's called owner operators, where they own their rigs. The rest are leasing them or like are part of a fleet. Okay. So like they, you know, and the people that do own their rigs, they need constant work because these trucks are insanely expensive to run. So I've been skeptical from the get-go of how many people or how many truckers, I should say, would even be down for this. It is enormously expensive. Some of the photos that I've been seeing in different groups on things like Telegram and Facebook, it looks like they've got maybe like 50 trucks, 100 trucks on at like peak, right? It's really hard to say for sure with those videos.
Something like that.
So if this isn't truckers, then who the hell is it?
So I will start by saying that one of the organizers, I've heard his name pronounced two ways, Brian Brace and Brian Brazzi, but Brian is a trucker. So he, you know, is definitely at the helm of this. And I think that helps the ethos of the movement to make it appear as though it is very much about the truckers. But then we have Leigh Dundas, who, and I'm going to reference the ADL here, is a quote, self-proclaimed human rights attorney and anti-vax activist. She was present at J6. She was present at like all the Stop the Steal rallies. She has called for violence against Democrats. Like, this is not a surprising person to have in your corner for a rally with this messaging. So those are the two people that every night when these truckers arrive at their new destination for their overnight, they are going and speaking to the crowds. And then they bring other people up to speak to the crowds, whoever it is, anybody from the crowd that wants to say something is able to say it. But by and large, it is led by those two figures. And like you said, it's hard to determine whether or not there are that many truckers in this for two reasons. One is that I haven't really seen a very good full overview where I can actually count each individual one. But at the same time, there's a lot of people who arrive at a location and then they say, okay, well, I've come with the convoy this far and I really wish I could go a little farther, but I gotta go home. And so they ride to a certain destination and then just like turn around and come back home. So that's why I've been telling people that I wouldn't even bother trying to gauge numbers until maybe Thursday, because after Thursday, they will have had a full overnight and a full day. So I guess actually a night, a day, and another night in the Indianapolis area in a place called Monrovia in Indiana. That's a lot of time for people to show up if they want to join in.
Yeah.
And it's also a lot of time for them to leave if they want to leave. So I'm trying to hold off on numbers estimates until Thursday, because after that, they only have like 48 hours to get to the DC area.
Yeah. And I've been telling folks too that, you know, this Thursday point's going to be pivotal. I recently moved to Chicago. The people around here that are interested, you know, left today to go meet them.
Wow.
Over there, there wasn't a ton of people, but I mean, all in all, probably like 50, 60 people, right? Just in this one little group. And as this moves closer to the East Coast, the ask becomes less of people. It is not asking people in California, drive across the country with me. People in Arizona, drive across the country with me. It is, hey, you're in Illinois. Want to come to DC? You can drive from Illinois to DC in a day.
It's less of a commitment.
Yeah, and especially they're thinking of getting there on a Saturday. It's the weekend, baby. Why not?
Yeah, you know? Why not? What else are they doing?
Call in sick on Friday. Let's go.
Exactly.
But so
that's why I think this is maybe a point where just between like population density and just the less commitment of time that is required of people who want to join at that point, this is where I think it might be a tipping point where we see it either go one way or another way.
So the organizers, you've got Brian, you've got Leigh. I will add on Leigh Dundas here that even though this convoy claims not to be pro-vax or anti-vax, Leigh Dundas regularly compares, COVID safety measures to Nazi Germany.
Correct.
So it's this whole we're not anti-vax thing is utter malarkey, if I may borrow a term, on this State of the Union night. So the people that are participating in this, the people tagging along, do we know anything about them? I mean, I imagine, you know, I'm thinking of the anti-vax protests that happened in DC in January. It was called Defeat the Mandates, drew thousands of people out.
Mm-hmm.
And the mix of people there was like fairly eclectic. You know, I think ahead of time, it got framed in media as this like far right gathering type thing. Mm-hmm. And then when they showed up and saw people's grandmas saying, let's go, Brandon, I think some reporters are maybe thrown off a little bit. Do we know anything, at least in the most general sense with the broadest brush, like what kind of crowd is this? What part of the conservative movement is getting in on this?
I would say it ranges. There are some people that say that they have been vaccinated. They just don't like the mandates. There are others who say that the vaccine is an experiment on humanity. I think what frustrates me is that they keep on repeating this trope of this is not about politics. This is not a partisan movement. This is an American movement, which first of all is not even true because Canada had the idea first. So you know, we can say this is our trucks are very American, but this was not our idea.
They stole the idea from us.
Yeah, Canada. But I think yesterday I was watching one of the speeches on the live stream, and someone had just gotten done saying that very thing, that it's not a partisan movement. And not 4 minutes later, Eric Greitens, who is apparently a former governor of Missouri and is running for Senate, he's also a former Navy SEAL, gets up on stage and talks directly about the left. I mean, verbatim, saying that all the left are liars and tyrants and they're all cruel and they want to take over this country and we have to take our country back because they're scared of us. So they can say that all they want. But this guy had the crowd and the crowd was very much with him. So whether or not there's any Biden voters, God, I'll believe it when I see it. Because by and large, this is a right, if not far right, movement. We see QAnon rhetoric. We see anti-communist, anti-leftist rhetoric. It is all the same talking points that I see in every other far-right circle on Telegram and wherever else.
So much of this protest is still up in the air. You know, we should know more around the time this podcast comes out, which will be early on Thursday. At least right now, I'm highly skeptical of anyone who's making, you know, too assertive of statements about what to expect, really. Yes, but alas, agreed. People are. And it's been getting particularly worse today because there was this guy up in Pennsylvania, Bob Bolus or something like that. I don't even know. Nobody knows who this guy is.
Granton guy. That's Granton guy.
But he did this interview with the news channel and was like, I'm going to get my trucks and choke DC like a boa constrictor. Okay. And then he like left with like a truck and like a dozen cars and nothing happened. There was another thing today where this guy who's running for governor of Maryland, I think that's what he's running for. He was calling for a convoy and nothing was going to happen. So he's like, actually, we're folding into the people's convoy. Yep. And he still did a rally in DC and it was like him and maybe five people.
Yeah, maybe.
And then like 20 reporters, because that's always how this goes. Mm-hmm. So like more and more people are making these kind of broad statements, even some reporters that I've seen that I think should know better than to be like jumping ahead of something like this. So I wanted to go through a few kind of rhetorical things that I keep seeing around with you, and we can just kind of hammer these out really fast and get your thoughts on them.
Sure.
Number one, this is like January 6th, is it?
What I see reminds me strongly of January 6th, but there are stark differences, not the least of which is the fact that there is no big rally to convene at, and you don't have the President of the United States telling you to come to DC.
Next thing, these things are fizzling out. Heck, you've seen one convoy fail, two convoy fail. You know, with Ukraine in the news, this is just going away.
It is true that Ukraine has kind of taken a bit of attention away from these convoys, but anybody who's been paying attention to the convoys up until this point knows that the People's Convoy always had the strongest backing behind it. And I myself, with my own eyes, have seen its engagement increase quite a bit in terms of followers, in terms of live stream viewers, in terms of comments on social media over the last 2, maybe 3 days. It has increased, I would say, exponentially.
Third one here, foreign influence is involved. Something, something, Vladimir Putin, they're paid in rubles, whatever.
We do know about some foreign influence, like what we saw in that Grid News article about people who set up the Freedom Convoy for Ottawa. These Facebook pages were not set up organically, but they were quite popular. So it's never zero. It's never zero involvement. But I can tell you for sure that what's driving this, from what I see, is just good old American nationalism.
And last one here. Far-right extremist. We're talking Proud Boys. We're talking the prouder Proud Boys. They're really into these protests.
While I have not personally seen firsthand evidence of involvement from these more organized like militias or groups, I spoke to somebody today, a reporter, and the ADL seems to have confirmed this, that an administrator of one of the convoy telegram channels is reportedly a member of the Maryland, D.C. Proud Boys chapter. So take that as you will.
So the signs are not, overt, but it remains a real possibility that we may see some of these groups participate somewhere along the way.
I think that groups like that may participate if this gets enough visibility and traction. I know that a lot of those groups like to be seen. They like to be visible. They like to be imposing and scary. And if nobody comes to the Beltway, then they're not going to have much of an incentive to spread their message, which is something that they obviously really like to do. But I would question why somebody would be so involved from the Proud Boys if they weren't planning to be involved at all.
So thanks for going through some of those points. Hopefully that's illuminating to people who are maybe seeing these kind of takes floating around online.
Yeah.
As we're winding down here, I'm curious, you know, you've been watching this really, really early and are continuing to watch it now. I'm interested in your thoughts on kind of where organizers have had success in this convoy and maybe where they're struggling. Because as we've both alluded to earlier, you know, this, even if it flops, if it fizzles, whatever, there is something interesting that happened here, which is kind of the building of this online infrastructure, this organization method, and it did produce a result. So I'm curious your thoughts, having watched this for a while, what was good, what was bad, and what that might tell us going forward if we see more things like this.
They've been really successful at getting far right and far right adjacent messaging out there, things that don't have to do with vaccines or mandates or the convoys. Early on, I was listening to these live chats on Telegram, and I was hearing in real time people trying to quote unquote red pill people talking about QAnon and Pizzagate theories and telling people to do their own research. So all these things that we see that are early signs, if not completely overt signs, of online radicalization. So that has been successful. The People's Convoy's Instagram page looks a lot better. It just is, it's better branded than it was at the beginning, maybe a little too late. But I think as they've gotten traction and support, they've been more incentivized to improve their image as a convoy. I will say that I haven't seen any obvious indication that this will be a violent event. It would be unfair for me to say that. It would also be unfair of me to say that every single person involved has bad intentions, because I do genuinely think that a lot of them are just seeking out community. And I think that that's been successful too. A lot of them are just really happy. It's kind of big, you know, a big road trip.
Yeah. Something that Amanda Moore talked about in our conversation was, you know, while the rest of the world was locked down, you know, worried about catching COVID, these anti-vax communities were gathering together and people could have a sense of normal human interaction and make friends and see friends and et cetera, you know. So I'm glad you brought that element up too.
Yeah, that's something that I heard Jake Rokitansky talk about from QAnon Anonymous when they went to one of the meetups. I want to say it was in Arizona. It was during COVID. And I remember him saying, like, man, these people are all like so happy. And I'm just scared. I'm scared of getting COVID. I'm scared of being here. Like, maybe they're doing it right. Which is all well and good until you realize what they actually stand for is quite insidious and not really as nice as they want to paint it. But I think where they're not going to be successful is convincing any authority to take away mandates, to remove the state of emergency, and what they really want, which is to hold politicians or people like Fauci accountable for what they think was this obvious like crime against humanity or something. Which is why we all kind of have to ask ourselves, what is the end game here really? If they don't get those demands, and what are they leveraging? How do you negotiate? You leverage something. What are they going to do? And that's what I can't figure out. Are they going to shut down part of the Beltway? Are they going to park? Are they just going to like drive around like a parade? That's what I cannot figure out at this point. And I think that we should think about that going forward.
I've been talking with Sarah Aniano. She's been tracking this trucker convoy from its earliest inceptions. And I've really appreciated the insights that you've brought here today, Sarah. It's Shitpost. As we're closing out here, I've got a question for you. What's your favorite thing on the internet right now?
My favorite thing on the internet right now is a Twitter account. It's called Jorts the Cat. And it got famous through this like Reddit post. The owner is anonymous, so we are to believe that this account is being run by this nice looking orange cat. And this cat fights for union workers. It fights for workers' rights. So it is a cat with a wonderful disposition. It's very cute, and it has the workers of America at heart. So if anybody is feeling very down about all the many horrible things happening in the world today, I would highly suggest going to Twitter and checking out George the Cat.
My favorite thing lately has been watching old System of a Down videos. I don't know if it's just like the situation.
I saw you post about that today.
It's just, I've been on this for a few days now. and it's, I don't know if it's just like feeling like the world's kind of going to shit during this Ukraine war stuff, but yeah. Just like the catharsis in that music. It's a little bit embarrassing, I think. To be
true. No, you're processing something. You're going through something.
Yeah, so I just need that like harmonized vocal where it's like la da 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 da. I don't know. That's what's doing it for me right now.
Yeah.
Sarah, where can people keep up with your work?
I'm on one social media platform and one social media platform only. That is on Twitter, and my handle is at CoolFaceJane.
Terrible choice of social platform, if I may say.
Nothing bad happens on Twitter. What do you mean? It's perfect.
Sarah, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.